Welcome to Guest Interview. I'm Barbara DeLand. Thank you very much for being with us today. A few months ago, our guest, Dr. Sean McGraw, professor and chair of Memorial University, Newfoundland, Canada's philosophy department, told us about his part in convening the Future of Nature, a four-day 2015 event to happen in September, which involved people in the province from environmental science, industry, and the arts, meeting together on the west coast of Newfoundland. Welcome, Sean.
Hi, Barbara.
Thank you for coming back again. For people unfamiliar with our conversation before that took place, would you please describe what the Future of Nature is all about? What exactly do you mean?
The Future of Nature was an event that we held in the west coast of Newfoundland at Grenfell Campus in Corner Brook, and also at in Norris Point at the Bombay Marine Station and at other venues around Grossmoor National Park. And it's a bit hard to describe because I don't think it has happened before. It's a unique event. It's a hybrid that brought together three things that usually aren't brought together. One is an academic conference. Two is an art festival. And three is ecotourism. All three were brought together in one package, and they were all changed. So the academics became much more down to earth, you could say, and publicly engaged. The arts became much less decorative, peripheral, marginal, and, you know, central to the issues we're discussing. And the tourism, if we could still call it that, became something less trivial. At the end of the event, you know, the community that we had created over those 4 days got on a boat, chartered boat, and went up Western Brook Pond. And I think at that point, we were no longer tourists. We were a transdisciplinary scientific expedition.
How many people approximately were involved?
The numbers fluctuated from day to day. I think we had, at our highest, we had a little over 100. The core group was about 70 people. And these would be people drawn mostly from 75% of them were from Newfoundland and Labrador. 25% of them were international.
Really?
Invitees. Mm-hmm. And students as well, I might add, not just academics and artists who are working professionally, but we also had students ranging from high school to graduate level.
Incredible. Involved. Was this all your idea?
Well, it was, I was at the center of the thing, but I worked with many people on it. I had a team that I worked with in the Department of Philosophy, and I was also quite involved with Grenfell's Office of Public Engagement.
But was it initially your idea?
It was initially my idea that came out of a research grant that I received a little over a year ago from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. And they were a major funder.
Concerning what was that research for?
The research was to discuss the concept of the death of nature, which is a theme that's has been recurrent since the 80s and now has become kind of a trope in contemporary environmental discourse. That now in the age of the Anthropocene, in the age of 7 billion people and climate change and rapidly expanding technology and disappearing wilderness and so on and so forth, we can no longer really talk about nature. Nature is dead. It's gone. It's just us now and what we do. And so the research was to actually examine this concept and to see if it was tenable.
Yes, now, in the course, true.
Yeah, exactly. In the course of doing the research, however, I became quite disenchanted with the whole business of doing academic research on this topic, and I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to go to another meeting and talk to
something more practical or more effective.
Yes, practical, effective, publicly engaged, global.
Yes.
It seems to me that the age of environmentalism is over. What we face now, and I think Pope Francis has given us great impetus to speak this way, is something different. This is not environmentalism. This is a unique situation in the history of the human race, where we're all called, actually, to think together, to work together, and to envision a possible future for ourselves and for all of the species with whom we share the planet.
And to do something ourselves and with our fellow people.
That's right. So if this is going to be a comprehensive joining of forces, let's say, marshalling of forces on the planet, well, then it has to happen in universities as well. And so to the idea of just hiving off into a specialist niche and talking to other, you know, environmental ethicists, didn't excite me in the least. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to bring everyone together and bring them into a community in order to talk with that community about the future of that particular place. That was the idea.
It sounds very, very exciting and very interesting. I would love to have been a little mouse. And when you're talking about climate change, I was thinking, I mentioned to you what I read recently, Gwynne Dyer, who usually talks about military, political problems around the world, especially recently in the Middle East and so on, the confusion and the civil wars and so on there. He was asked by somebody, well, he was saying that he didn't think that that was really as important as a lot of people and as crucial and a big as emergency as a lot of people were saying it was. And somebody said, well, what do you think is more important or more crucial to the world at this point? And he said, climate change, which I found really interesting. For somebody who's so immersed in political, military, and terrorist action, civil wars, and so on, I found that really interesting.
And of course, it's true. You know, the wars and the terrorism and so on is not a new feature of our life. We have to manage a situation in which violence is a regular part of our political existence. But what climate change is something new, and we're forced now to think differently about the human community, about the Earth, and about the future. And this is a completely new challenge, because this, regardless of whether we regard it to be anthropogenic or not, that was the only debate, by the way. Nobody is debating whether the climate is changing. We're debating why it's changing. So regardless of whether we stand on that, and the 95% of the science says it's anthropogenically
caused. What does that mean?
That means it is human activity that is changing the climate. Carbon released into the air by the burning of fossil fuels through an expanding, technologically advanced human civilization. Mm-hmm. So, but regardless of where we are on that question, we can't deny that the climate is changing, and we know what the change is going to look like and what it's going to mean for future generations. And it's going to be devastating. It's going to absolutely change everything, as Naomi Klein puts it, on the planet. And we have we're called now to think about that future in a way that we never really were challenged to think about the future before. So we're being asked to make decisions, let's say limiting our consumption, changing the way we exchange goods and so on, for the sake of not just, you know, our children, but our children's children's children. That is, for a distant future in which we won't be. And so we're called to think about the planet with a degree of moral responsibility that I think is unprecedented in human history. And that's why we're seeing so many voices lining up and calling the alarm, you know, sounding the alarm bells on this issue, including Pope Francis, whose Laudato Si, I think, is the most important thing ever written on climate change.
And not only affecting us, people, humans, societies around the world, but all of the living things that we either live with or could depend on.
Of course, yeah.
What happened in those 4 days in practice with these people from these different communities, backgrounds? What, besides your trip to, I don't mean physically what you did, but what happened in the discussions that you found to be really important and really new and really interesting for you?
What was new? Of course, there were a lot of things that happened which were not new. So the academics read papers from their various fields, anthropology, sociology. The scientists gave illuminating discussions about the various species that are a threat in the marine areas around North Point. All of that is the kind of activity we've seen before. The artists performed. We had extraordinary musical performance in North Point, or in Woody Point, from Dark by Five, which is Grossmorn Summer Music. That really blew people's minds, actually, that there was such culture and such a isolated place. We had a visual
art. And who were they? Who were
Dark
those people?
Dark Five Five is the resident orchestra of Gross Morn Summer Music, organized by David Maggs.
Uh-huh.
So it was amazing for people.
Very high quality.
It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. So things happened that have happened before, but they were all happening together is what was new.
Yes.
And I think that at the end of these 4 days, we had done something that I have never seen done at an art festival or in an ecotouristic context, and certainly never in an academic conference. We had constellated a genuine community. That is, these people who had
Among
come
yourself.
Together. Yes, who had come together from diverse fields, diverse places of the world, through the process of thinking together, talking together, eating together, hiking together, enjoying art together, they had become a community. There were genuine bonds of love and affection among the members of that group. And it occurred to me that that was the concrete takeaway. What we wanted to do was create a community. It came to me like a flash at a certain point. That's what this is all about. Not about creating a new paper on climate change or even a new set of recommendations for government, but creating a community of resistance, if you like. And as I thought further about that, it occurred to me that the real problem facing
not only resistance, but some positive ideas of
Absolutely.
Approaching it
a community
in the first...
of hope, a
yes.
community of hope. Resistance is hope. Hope. It's only by means of hope that we will have the courage to resist, you know, the life-destroying
yes.
energies of
But I can imagine there must have been some very good ideas thrown out that people could take and hold on to and work with in the future and in practical ways.
Well, I think that this is, for me, this was the big idea, because it seems to me that, and this is something that, to go back to Francis, this is what he says in Laudato Si, that the greatest threat or the greatest obstacle to responding, let's say, positively to the challenges facing us environmentally is the lack of genuine community in the planet. So our rural communities are, you know, tragically undersupported. We call community now a group of Facebook friends. We don't even know the people who live next door to us. And the reason this is a problem is because we have been told repeatedly through the media that it's going to be the individual that makes a difference. You know, you should recycle and you should walk to work and so on. That's not the case. It's not individuals that will make a difference. It will be communities that will make a difference one way or another. If the worst effects of climate change come true, then it's going to be communities that ensure the survival of the human race. If our best hopes for altering, you know, for preventing those terrible things from happening are to occur, it's going to be through community action.
So this was an amazing 4 days, no doubt, in every respect. What would you say, are there any concrete steps to be planned for in the future for this group? Are you meeting again? Are people going out and doing specific projects about this? Is it mainly about publicity, getting the word out? What happens from here after the conference? What do you see happening from now?
Well, we have several things planned, of course. And we are, I should say immediately, March 3rd and 4th in St. John's, there will be a Future of Nature reprise that will include a one-day workshop at Memorial University on the topic of integral ecology from the perspective of the humanities and the social sciences. And that will be gathering together a hub of researchers at Memorial University who, for the most part, haven't been in contact and don't know each other and are now actually part of this community. So that will be the academic side. And then we're hoping to, where we are planning to do something at the Rooms the next day on the 4th. Showing a film and visiting and exhibiting some of the art related to the event. So that's the very immediate future.
Yeah. And are any of those people who are at the event going to be present for that?
I hope they will all be there.
Yes.
They're all invited.
Yes.
And we are, of course, planning our next move. Now, what we did on the West Coast was very expensive and took a lot of planning. So you don't do them, you don't do an event, you don't do an event like this.
Who paid for all that?
The Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada paid for the bulk of it, but we had some generous donations from various departments and faculties at Memorial University,
Wonderful.
Including the Dean of Science.
Wonderful.
I'd like to add the Department of Economics, and crucially, at the last minute and in a very important and significant way, the President of the University, Gary Kachanowski, who really floated the ship for us. So we were supported at every level in the university and then by the federal government through the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council.
Good. I'm glad to hear about all that. But I'm also wondering where you mentioned people came from abroad, from other countries.
We had about 25% of the group was international.
Where
now
did
that
they
was
come
deliberate.
From?
That we didn't want to fill the place with international people because that's too typical. You know, what you do is typically is you go to an interesting rural place like Norris Point and you bring international researchers there to tell everybody how to live. We didn't want to do that.
No.
We wanted to bring the international people to Norris Point to listen to Norris Point about how to live and how to plan a future on the West Coast.
So the
people you asked about where they came from. So we had
how far away?
Costa Rica. We had the dean of the National University of Costa Rica present, Manuel de Luna. We had Germans significantly present, three Germans, in fact, from various parts of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
There were some American colleagues present. Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I just wanted to know in general from how far away they came. And you talk about listening to the people of Norris Point and the people who represent here rather than someplace else. Who were those people that they were listening to from the Norris Point area?
I think in that regard, the most significant thing that happened was the Aboriginal Sharing Circle, which happened, in fact, in Steady Brook in the afternoon preceding the event. So we invited all Aboriginal leaders in the community to come together and have a drumming circle. And I didn't know what this was going to look like. And they said, well, we should do a sharing circle. And I didn't know what that was. Chief Measle Joe was an absolute central player here. So what occurred was that the weather got miraculously perfect, as it does in Newfoundland on occasion. And there we sat in the beautiful on the beautiful grounds of the Marble Inn Resort in Steady Brook in a circle, about 50 of us, half of us Aboriginal people and the other half Future of Nature delegates. And the microphone was passed around the circle and we were all to speak from our hearts. And this was an extraordinary event. It happened, went on for about 2-3 hours. And it really set the tone for everything that we did. Because
something that a lot of those people aren't used to doing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, it occurred to me the next morning as I was giving my paper that one of the things we're doing at the Future of Nature is we're having an academic sharing circle. And in a sharing circle, you speak from the heart. And the idea is that the speaking that happens in that circle is an effective speaking. It's not, you know, that we get tired of too much talk. Of course, we want to see action. Well, this is talk that is active. This is talk that changes. That is the outcome of the most positive outcome of a sharing circle. So the Aboriginal communities were absolutely crucial. There were also, however, the local arts community was present. I spoke about Grossmore and summer music. We used the Cottage Hospital in Norris Point. The local high school students, we had a delegation of local high school students who were gathered together.
But the Cottage Hospital, like the medical staff and people like that?
No,
there?
That's a museum, actually. The Cottage Hospital is a museum.
I see.
Which is now a hostel.
I see.
And it's a museum dedicated to the way medicine used to be administered in these communities in the not too distant past.
So people from that museum
and a group,
high school
and a,
students.
And a group of really interested, enthusiastic high school students from all the from schools selected from around the area. As well as university students from Grenfell, and people who are simply interested and concerned. And it's not hard to find such people. Everybody's concerned.
Now, what do you plan to do to engage the wider public from here on in, besides the meetings that you've talked about in March and the presentations here in Newfoundland? Are there any steps to reach out to the wider public community within Canada and other places?
Absolutely. In fact, this was a pilot project of an initiative which is called For a New Earth, which has been constructed to stage interventions in environmentally sensitive places of the world in order to free up a local voice there and to envision positively a future for that place.
Now, where does For a New Earth come from?
For a New Earth is the outcome of this research project that we spoke of.
I see.
So we're planning to go elsewhere, and we have plans to go to Labrador. And we are looking at an international location at the moment. I'm thinking of the Southern Hemisphere. But this is going to take time and effort. Everything is for the public, by the way. The whole thing is to be publicized. So we have a website. We will be publishing various things, including a film. There should be a YouTube movie produced soon.
Yes, that's wise.
Yeah.
Something on social media seems to reach a lot of people who don't have access in person or financially to a lot of other meetings and conferences. What personally have you done in the past to be interested in all of this personally, not as an, on an academic level, but just personally? How has this whole concept and this whole subject been part of your life?
Well, let me think how I can answer that quickly. It's always been a part of my life. So when I was 20 years old and I finished my undergraduate studies at Memorial, I didn't go directly to graduate school. In fact, I went and lived in the woods for
Did
5
you?
Years.
Where?
In various Canada? Places. I started on the south coast of Newfoundland, and then I went to Nova Scotia, and there I joined a community down there, I retreated from modernity, which horrified me. And this was 1990.
What horrified you about it?
The rapid pace of change, the erosion of communities, the destruction of wilderness, the disregard for natural beauty.
Is that something you wanted to get away from?
Absolutely.
I see. And are you a Newfoundlander?
I'm a Newfoundlander, yeah. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, it occurred to me that I had a responsibility for the world, too. So I returned after 5 years, went to grad school, and began to kind of toy with research environmental issues in the context of grad school. And I was not particularly interested in a professionalized approach to the environment or even a politicized approach to the environment. Environmentalism, you know, from the left, or environmental ethics or something like that. This all struck me as, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And I didn't participate, but I taught. I taught regularly courses in environmental philosophy.
Did you?
So it was not a research issue, but it was a living issue. It was almost as though it was too close to my heart for me to make it a research topic.
Yes.
And so now I seem to be ready to do that, to make that step. But this is also why I want it to be a very different kind of approach. So I don't want to participate or sustain the various kinds of discussions which have been going on for a long time and have done nothing. I want to start a different kind of discussion. So the inclusion of the arts in this regard is crucial. And the localization of the discussion is crucial. What's the point of talking about this issue in a five-star hotel in Montreal with a group of academics who are really trying to climb a career ladder with you know, we should go to the places that are at issue and experience them with our senses. See them, smell them, feel the rain on our face. Look at it and wonder and meet the people whose lives have been there and hopefully will continue to be there in the future.
And in the beginning of this, I mentioned as part of the people in this event involved were people from industry. Now, what part of industry were people representing who were there, and what part are they playing in all of this? So far as you know.
Unfortunately, industry didn't come. We invited them. There was a funny moment where I was talking to a business leader, and he said he was representative of a group of industries. And he said, well, my members don't want to come to your meeting because you have nothing to trade. And I sat back and laughed, and I thought, that's absolutely true. We don't have anything to trade at all. But I do think that industry missed an opportunity because, and this we are going to work again. We want industry there. This is not us versus them or the Greenpeace, too.
What can we all do together?
So I think the reason, the opportunity industry missed, and I hope industry is listening, is that this was a chance for them to meet with some of their harshest critics. So the people from the arts community, the people, environmentalists, the ecologists, some of their harshest critics, some of the people that they are so desperately trying to win over through their green technology, through their socially responsible investing programs and so on. So I hope that in the next iteration of the future of nature, industry will show up recognizing that this is an opportunity that they can't afford not to take.
And seeing themselves as separate from it all.
Yeah.
Or under threat totally from all of it. And I'm thinking maybe from listening to people talking in the last election that there's a bit of a fresh wind blowing from the top of our government that there's going to be a little bit more engagement with the whole subject that we've been discussing than has been previously done in the last, say, 15 or 20 years.
Well, we can hope.
We can hope.
Yeah. One of the things to say about industry, however, and this I want to go back to Laudato Si as well, is the point that Pope Francis makes in that encyclical is that the environmental issue is an economic issue. We need to re-examine the way we produce and trade and run economies. So there's no way in the world that we could have a responsible discussion about something like that without having industry and economists present. Now, economists were present, of course, because that's part of the university curriculum. But we need to have
everyone. They were present
there
at the event?
Oh, of course, yes.
Oh, good.
My collaborator is an economist,
yes,
Gabriela
Sadao
from Grenfell campus. So, yeah, it's got to be about economy. It's got to be about politics. We can't exclude these things. We're not talking about saving the wilderness. We're talking about making the planet habitable for 7 to
every
11
living
billion
thing.
Human beings, and how many as many species as can possibly flourish in that situation.
Yes.
That's an economic issue.
Was there anything that surprised you personally that you didn't really expect to see happen within the group, other than the feelings that you had when you were having your sharing circle and the beautiful music that was a bit of a surprise? That existed in that part of Newfoundland. Was there anything else that really surprised you and took you aback a bit, either positively or negatively?
I think what surprised me most, I spoke about how for many years I was not, you know, publicly involved in this issue, but was sort of doing it in the background. And I think there was a kind of cynicism attendant on that kind of non-participation.
For you?
Yes, and the idea that there's really nothing we can do, you know, so what's the point? And I think what surprised me was to see how much energy people really do have for this question, and how feasible it is that the despair that grips the world right now, vis-a-vis the future, could turn into hope. But it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of sacrifice. But I feel that there are many, many people ready to do that, and we simply need to start speaking differently about the future.
And I think there are also more people of power who are seem to be, like the Pope, for example, and for some of the heads of government, seem to be a little bit more engaged and a little bit more challenged by this, and it's not just some peripheral thing. Well, I thank you very much for coming. Our guest has been Dr. Sean McGraw, who is professor and chair of the philosophy department at Memorial University in Newfoundland, Canada. And we have been talking about this incredible meeting, four-day meeting, called The Future of Nature, but it's part of a much larger group and a much larger project and a much larger vision. It's been a pleasure hearing what you've had to say, Sean. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Barbara.
And I wish you well, and I hope you'll keep us all posted on what's happening this year and in the future with this whole subject. My appreciation to you, Roger Angel, for your assistance today, as usual. It's been a pleasure sharing this time with you listening today, and I hope you'll tune in again next week for guest interview. I'm Barbara DeLand. Thank you.